What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
All right, it's hour three of Felger and Maserati on a Friday, agenda-free Friday, brought to you by Planet Fitness, the world judges they don't, planetfitness.com. And when we hit the 4 o'clock hour on Friday, we're joined by Christopher L. Gasper. That's for Lee of the Boston Globe. He's brought to you by Mass General Hospital. He joins us now in our Town for Tire Studios. Hi, Christopher.
What's going on? How you guys doing?
Christopher Lee.
So, this week, you just gave me a good line off the air.
Yeah.
Give it on the air. What is this week? How would you describe this week?
A bunch of fake hype.
Fake hype?
Fake hype.
Why is it fake hype?
Look, I mean, these are two of the better teams in the AFC, and I get it, but there's no real rivalry here. They met in one AFC championship game. The Patriots escaped with the victory. The Jaguars did what the Jaguars do. And now there's all this fake hype around it because Jalen Ramsey is trying to build his brand. So these interviews he gave to magazines like months ago, ESPN and Esquire, where really, he's just kind of like, look at me, I'm in Jacksonville, I'm really good, like, look at me. You know, he's the latest in a long line of these trash-talking corners, which I love, by the way. I do enjoy that. But it's, you know, he's next in line in terms of succession from the Josh Normans and the Richard Shermans. I don't think he actually believes any of the stuff he said against Gronk. And it's like, you know, it's like high school. It's like, Gronk, did you hear what Jalen Ramsey said about you? Oh, did you hear that? Oh, did you see that? What are you going to do about that? And then it's like, Jalen, do you see what Gronk said about what you said about him? It's like, dude, give me a break. Like, so, let's just go and play the game. Like, this is fake hype. And even some of the stuff that's happened.
Who called it a rivalry, though?
People are trying to build it up as one, Maz.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say it's a rivalry. I would say it's a big game. Don't you think it's a significant game?
It is a significant game, but the focus isn't. Do you think the focus is on the game? Do you think people are like, hey, how are the Patriots going to cover Corey Grant? Or is Blake Bortles good enough to beat the Patriots? Or is it just about, like, well, this guy said this and that guy, and nobody trash talks the Patriots and gets away with it. Like, I don't really hear people talking about the game.
Okay, so on a national level, maybe you're right. But do you think the Patriots are going to be able to score a lot of points in this game?
I think they'll be able to score enough points. I do. I mean, I think the game will ultimately come down to, right, and this is not rocket science. I think it's the two units that people have question marks and doubts about. And on the Jaguars side, that's the offense, right? Marquise Lee, wide receiver, out for the year. We'll see if Fournette can play with that hamstring. From what I saw, Bortles, they won that game against the Giants in week one, but I feel like people have forgotten. Miles Jack took an interception back for a touchdown. Their offense scored 13 points, and he looked terrible. I feel like he sort of reverted. Like maybe he made the Nick Foles deal, Murray. I don't know. But I feel like he's sort of regressed. So that's on that side. The other side is the Patriots defense, which looked really, really good in week one against Deshaun Watson. I think Watson was somewhat complicit in that. I think that a terrible Texans offensive line was complicit in that as well. But I think I like this defense better than last year's defense. And that's where the game's going to come down to. Can Jacksonville score enough points to win the game? How will the Patriots respond defensively? Will they allow some of the same stuff they allowed in last year's game, where if Jacksonville had kept pressing the advantage, they probably would have won the game?
So why is this, though, fake hype more than any other week where that stuff sort of happens? Because it does sort of happen.
Sure.
Why does this... Like this, you think they don't really care?
I just think it's like I said, it's just sort of this trumped up hype for this game, which, by the way, I feel like could stand on its own as an interesting game. But the whole Jalen Ramsey Gronk thing, like I think it's been completely overblown. I really don't care, like, you know, what Gronk thinks about what Jalen Ramsey said. And I think, again, I don't even think Jalen Ramsey really believes these things that he's saying. I think he's just saying, I'm in Jacksonville, I'm this great player, nobody pays attention to me. How do I get people to pay attention to me? And I think that's sort of what's going on.
Well, fair enough.
It's overshadowed the actual football.
Well,
for me.
I mean, not here. We haven't spent a tremendous amount of time on it. We've played the sound because it's decent sound. But
also the second game of the year. Like, I get it's a big game, but it's the second game of the year.
No, I know, and that's what sort of sucks, too. That it's in a weird spot that, you know. And again, I'm not a buyer on Jacksonville, but some people think they're the next team. Some people think they're right there in terms of talent in the AFC. Some people think this is a game that will have implications for home field later on down the line. So it's like, this is one of these, you know, this would be like a Denver equivalent, except those games are usually in November, or Indy equivalent, but those games are usually, you know, in a sweeps month as opposed to the second week of September. So it's a weird spot. I get it, but it may have those same implications. Take out the hype.
Sure.
Jalen Ramsey covering Rob Gronkowski. Isn't that something you want to see? And if you're Jacksonville, don't you have to do that?
It's something I want to see as a football fan. If you're Jacksonville, I'm not sure that you do have to do
that.
Because you could double Gronk, with a linebacker or safety over the top and then put Ramsey on somebody else, and you'd never hear from that somebody else the rest of the game. And so now you're sort of taking away like two guys. So there's an argument there.
Are a linebacker and a safety really enough against Gronkowski?
Didn't Houston double Gronk?
They tried. I mean, you know, they tried to do it. Now, McDaniels had some nice wrinkles there. Like that first touchdown, they sort of flanked him out wide. It was a great back shoulder throw. Kareem Jackson doesn't get over in time. The Jaguars have better linebackers and a better secondary than the Texans. I think they can execute, you know, better. So you can make an... I think you'll see some of Ramsey on Gronk, but I don't think it's going to be 70 snaps of Ramsey on Gronk.
No, it won't be. I mean,
I mean, we've been saying Ramsey on Chris Hogan's a waste for Jacksonville. I mean, why do you need to...
You could take away two guys. You can try and take away one. I mean, Gronk's going to win some of that because he's just bigger than him. And if you throw it up there, I think a couple of times he can just go up and get it. But if I sort of double Gronk and try and force Brady to throw into traffic against my very fast defense, these linebackers are faster. They'll be able to run and get deeper drops and get in the way. And then I put Ramsey on somebody else, whether it's Dorsett or Hogan. Now I could take away two things. So now what's Brady going to do? And here comes my pass rush. So you have to get rid of it quickly. So, I mean, there's different ways of sort of looking at it. As fans, we want to see, like, oh, Ramsey for 75 snaps against Gronk.
Yes.
If I'm if I'm Todd Walsh, the defensive coordinator down there, I'm not doing that. That's not going to necessarily help me. It's going to declare everything for Brady. He's going to figure out where to go with the ball.
Do you take Jacksonville seriously?
I do defensively. I just think offensively they're going to have some issues this year. I think Bortles is going to regress. Their wide receivers are talented but young. You know, Keelan Cole, D.D. Westbrook, and Fournette needs to be healthy for them. And I know last year was just his rookie year, but they rode him pretty hard last year and already has this hamstring situation. So a lot of it for me is I don't feel like Bortles is going to take a step forward. I think he's going to take a step back. And that offense as it was last year when they had more guys, they had more talent, at least at wide receiver, I think there was a little bit, you know, more of a margin for error for him. I think that's going away, and that coupled with him taking a step back, I don't like their offense as much as I did last year.
I mean, I'm interested in the game, Chris, because I think the Patriots are going to have a hard time scoring. And when I say hard time, okay, like, you know, most games the Patriots go into and you say they're going to get high 20s at a minimum, even Houston for crying out loud. Yeah. But this game, I don't feel that way.
So what do you think they're going to score?
It would not shock me if they don't get to 20.
Wow.
Would not shock me if they don't get to 20.
I think they might get a short field a couple of times.
So you might be right. I mean, again, but I think Jacksonville's going to play conservatively. I do think, what was that stat earlier that Sosa had? Jacksonville was 10-2 last year when they scored first.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big thing for the Jags because they can't play from behind. They got to be out in front, which is how they played the AFC title game last year. And I don't know. I just look at Jacksonville and say, I'm no Bortles believer either. I'm not going to tell you I am. Okay, but I look at Jacksonville and say, that's a good young defense.
It is.
They should have won the game up here last year. They are through the roof down here for this game. I could totally see Jacksonville winning this game. Completely. I think you're underselling, frankly.
As you a wanna, game or yeah. as a challenge?
As a game. Both.
Yeah, it's the second game of the year. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting.
So
it's compelling.
It doesn't count?
Chris, how many good games are they going to have this year? How many good games do they have on any given year?
I think there's a number of good. The Kansas City game is interesting to me. The Packers game?
At the end of the day.
That's in 10 weeks.
The Vikings game?
When you look back on
Steelers?
When you look back on a Patriots season.
Yeah.
How many competitive, compelling games are there a year with genuine pushback from a genuine opponent?
Can I count games with mortar kicks in them or no?
A handful, right? Exactly. You know,
excellent guess, but way to go.
Unless you bring them into it, right? It's a handful. I mean, it really is. They're usually a handful of them. So here's one of them. Don't pee on our parade here, kid. We might have a game on Sunday. Can we at least just?
Sure. Let's talk about the game. I mean, I'm down to talk about the game.
We don't spend a lot of time on the trash. We just play the sound.
The other thing is Green Bay here, Minnesota here. Pittsburgh is there.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's there.
But other than the Pittsburgh game, this is the toughest road game they're going to have all year.
I just think, but you know, if these teams meet again, by the time they meet, they're going to be different teams. There'll be an evolution there. This is week two, right?
Yeah, we do.
This is the whole thing, right? If the Patriots win, it's a big victory. If they lose, it's just an extension of the preseason, correct?
Just the opposite on this show. Just the opposite on this show. If they win, it doesn't really count. If they lose, look out.
Oh, yeah, no.
We
emphasize the negative.
It's just, you've got it all backwards there, pal. All right, your phone's on whatever you want, Agenda Free Friday with Chris Gasper. We'll go to you right after this.
Felger and Mavs. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mavs.
I love it.
You were right, Mavs.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Any conversations with Jalen Ramsey this week?
No, I don't have his number. He doesn't have mine.
What are your thoughts about him saying stuff about you?
I mean, that's how he feels. That's how he feels. I mean, it's a big game this Sunday. We're playing them. I'm sure I'm going to have opportunities to go versus him. I'm sure he's going to have opportunities to go versus me. So I'm just preparing like I always prepare. I got to just do my job out on the field and just worry about that.
Does that motivate you, Glenn?
For sure. I mean, there's always motivation you're looking for. I mean, it does and it doesn't.
You think it's like...
So that's tricky right there. Doesn't give you the answer you're looking for. That was a trick question. You're trying to get me to say something, right? All right. But it does and it doesn't. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it motivates you. You're hearing that, you know. Obviously, there's something out there that he saw on film and stuff that I could probably get better at football in some certain categories. I mean, you don't always feel the best every single day when you're out on the field, so that's how he feels. That's how he feels.
All right, that's just for Gasper. He doesn't want to hear it. Fake hype. Calls with you on everything here on Agenda Free Friday. Gasper again joining us as he does this hour every week. Guy in Boston on the coaching tree of Bill Belichick. Go ahead, Guy.
Yes, the tree sucks for one reason, and you could even tell Maz. Tom Brady. Tom Brady's the reason the rest of the tree sucks. Bill has him. The rest don't. Bye now.
Okay, Gasper, your thoughts?
I think that does have a lot to do with it. I mean, any of these coaches, you give them a quarterback and they look better. I mean, I always say this about Pete Carroll in Seattle, right? And they stumble upon Russell Wilson in the third round and credit Pete sort of the same way you credit Bill in 01. It wasn't an easy choice to go with Wilson. They had brought in Matt Flynn. They paid him all this money, but he saw something. The guy could play. Suddenly Pete's winning Super Bowls. You know, Pete's the win for everything. It's all great. Any of these coaches is better with a quarterback.
So what's the best quarterback these coaches have been given?
Mangini had Favre, didn't he?
Well, yeah, but that was...
You was know, I going to say Pennington, too, at the end?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue right now, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, I'd say Matthew Stafford.
Yes.
But he certainly didn't look like it the first week. And Patricia's not really a guy that's going to do much on the other side of the ball, even though he came up coaching offensive line. But still, I mean, no, none of these guys has had anything like Brady. I think the real test now is O'Brien. Like, because Watson can play.
Yeah.
He needs some coaching and to be developed. But does O'Brien make him better or worse? Because when O'Brien was here as offensive coordinator, it's like he inherited Brady was fully formed, good to go. O'Brien's really sort of the litmus test to me.
Chris, just quickly, do you think Patricia's going to be a success as a head coach?
I don't.
So you're not a fan either?
I mean, I like him personally, yeah, but I don't think he's ready.
Okay.
I don't think he's ready. And I know in the past, just talking to players, they felt he wasn't always the best at sort of taking what was on the chalkboard, whatever they use now, iPad, and sort of putting it in terms that guys could understand. You know, in some ways, like his intelligence almost gets in the way, which is the opposite of Bill, who's hyper-intelligent, but will break it down to a point where he says, if we do these three things, we'll win the game. The sense I got from talking to guys in the past is that Patricia's not particularly adept at that.
Here's Keith in Rhode Island on the fake Red Sox win last night. Go ahead, Keith.
Mike, can you hear me? Thanks for taking the call.
Go ahead.
I want to thank you a little bit for at least pretending to be a homer, because the two boobs on the left of you seem like they can't stand all the teams here in Massachusetts. But so everyone says that that you guys say that the two Red Sox wins are fake. And I don't know how that is so, because they sharted down their pants and whatnot. But when a team faces the Patriots and they shart down their pants, you guys laugh it off and give credit to the Patriots.
Why? Okay, so here's the difference. Because the Patriots have actually won something. We know they're a good team. The Red Sox have won exactly diddly-poo. In games that have mattered, they're 1-6 in the last 2 years. And so when they get into a game like last night, and they're facing a horrible team that has nothing to play for, and their bullpen comes in and absolutely lights a flame to it, and they win the game only because that horrible suck-ass team on the other side drops a pop-up, that's a fake win.
Right. I would put it as the difference is that in the playoffs, the Red Sox are that team that charts themselves.
You know, when you
to answer
see
the caller's question.
With this team this year, it comes down to, it's just, okay, they had absolutely, positively no business winning that game. And two, in recent memory, last night and that fake win against the Miami Marlins a couple of weeks back, they're fake. So they're not at 100 wins yet.
Well, I'm going to say, I don't consider this one a fake one, but but for to help you guys out,
thank you.
The game they won on the Sunday night against the Yankees, where if Andujar just throws it to first base, the game's over.
Another fake win.
The game's over at that point. It's a routine throw from third to first, and he can't make it.
It's grandfathered in. We're not going to go back and change wins.
No, I'm not saying you should, but I mean, they have benefited from some very poor fundamental play from other teams at times this year. But, they're still the best team, obviously, in the American League. I just don't think... Here's my thing.
Do you obviously think they're the best team in the
league? I do. But I don't think the gap between them and the other teams, when you get in the playoffs, is as big as you would think based on the standings. In other words, I don't think that they are 10.5 games better than the Yankees, or that much better than Cleveland or Houston. When I look at it, to me, those series are toss-ups. And when you look at the games the Red Sox have played against those teams, do you feel like they are 10.5 games better than any of those teams?
Nope. Neck and neck to me.
Yeah, I don't know, but that Yankees win got grandfathered in that you're talking about. I'd like to petition to Murray that we actually make them 98-46-3. I think that one should be considered a fake win. I'm going to actually pass a petition around the office here to get that one signed.
Scott in Maine with another Red Sox thought. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. What do you got?
Three quick points. I love the fake wins. Keep it going. I love it. I understand why you don't want to, why you grandfather some things in, but there's a lot more fake wins in there. And I'm a huge Red Sox fan. Number two, Tony, the playoff roster.
Yeah, go.
I love Blake Swihart just like you do. Is he going to make it? And number two,
Hart, three,
Smelly Kelly is out. Bingo, bango, goodbye.
Okay, Scott. So playoff roster, Swihart in, is Joe Kelly still in?
So right now, if they left Kelly off today, I'd be surprised. Like, ask me again in 2 weeks. If he has a horrible September, then I think there's a chance they could leave him off. But I'd be surprised, because for who? Like, who's going to get on in his place?
Stephen Wright?
Willie Cuevas?
Stephen Wright.
Okay, so...
I mean, Stephen Wright, when we did it last week, I don't know if Stephen Wright was on your playoff roster.
So he wasn't. Right? No, he wasn't.
Cora definitely likes Wright. You can tell.
It feels that way, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it seems like he doesn't like Joe Kelly.
Yeah, I can't say I blame him.
But, when he talks after the games about, Kelly failing, there's just a... He's putting, the filter on, but you can feel the frustration.
There's, a resignation.
Oh, totally. Can you blame him? Again, the guy's doing shows with Jim Rome saying he wants to hit in the World Series.
So Stephen Wright for Joe Kelly. That's the...
So I wouldn't totally rule it out. Swihart, I don't know about. I mean, to me, that's, Cora was asked a third catcher question the other day and said, well, we did it last year with Houston, blah, 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 but he wouldn't commit. And I don't blame him, because it gives away, tells someone else that they're probably not going to make it. So... at this stage, I'd be surprised if they kept Swihart on the roster.
Yeah, for me right now, Kelly's off. I've seen enough. I don't think you can trust him at this point. And you talk about Houston last year, right, where Cora was. They pieced it together with guys who weren't really true relievers. And I think they've sort of put Cora in the same spot. You've seen enough of Kelly to know. I mean, could you see him in game five of an ALDS in the eighth inning?
So when are they going to start moving these starters back here? I mean, Evaldi's starting this weekend, isn't he? Isn't Evaldi getting a start?
I'll double check, but I think it's an abbreviated one. I'll check.
Well, either way.
Honestly, I haven't paid a ton of attention to the rotation, because Willie Cuevas is pitching tonight, only because Hector Velasquez got scratched. So, I look at that and say they're in total shutdown mode, but I'll find out for you.
Agenda Free Friday. Here's a basketball thought. Jeff in New Hampshire. What do you got, Jeff?
If Kyrie Irving signs with the New York Knicks, he's the biggest fraud loser to ever put on a Celtics jersey, and I hope his knee turns into dust.
Wow, that's strong.
Pacers by a million this weekend. Make football violent.
Hey, Jeff, your comment line says J.R. You just hung up. His comment line said J.R. Smith on Kyrie Irving. Did J.R. Smith say something about Kyrie Irving?
Not that I'm aware of. Yeah, I'm not aware of that.
Look it up.
Look it up, Mark.
What do you think of Kyrie Irving and his long-term future here in Boston?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before. I mean, I have some questions about it. I mean, this is a guy that has left at least one seemingly enviable situation before where he's set up to win. And I think it's difficult to sort of figure out what drives him in a lot of ways. What drives him? What is he in pursuit of? What makes him happy? And that idea of going to New York and being the savior, maybe that's something that he would enjoy. And he would
feel like
he'd finally get the shine that he wants.
You're not hyper-confident that he's staying.
No, I'm not. No, I'm definitely not hyper-confident that he's staying, because I think he's sort of this inscrutable type of guy. Do you think anybody really knows what makes him tick?
No. He is.
So it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Odd duck.
And it's also one of those things, too. Like, this happens a lot in the NBA, whether it's Durant to the Warriors or LeBron to Miami, LeBron to the Lakers. You'll start to hear this thing. You'll start to, you know, you'll start to hear and see the smoke. And there's been a lot of smoke this offseason about Kyrie to the Knicks. So it's hard for me to just dismiss that out of hand when it keeps popping up.
All right, I found it. Apparently, he just did like a quick hit interview with Bleacher Report, and they asked him about the Knicks' chances of signing Kyrie Irving next offseason, and his answer was high.
Well,
when asked next, how were you feeling at the end of game one of the NBA Finals, his answer was high.
And then he threw a bowl of soup at him.
It's so easy. That just writes itself, doesn't it, Murray? But so, like, there is an inordinate amount of, well, I don't want to say inordinate, whatever, building smoke on the Knicks thing. There
yeah,
really
and it's like enough of the, you know, you're sort of hearing it from players like J.R. Smith. Frank Isola had something to say about it. So it's Zach Lowe didn't dismiss it. These are reputable, outside of J.R. Smith, sources that are telling you that there's a chance. So at the very least, don't we have to say this is something that Kyrie is considering and yes. that it intrigues him?
Yes.
And he'll see what happens this year before yes. he totally rules it out?
Absolutely.
The players in that league and the executive, they can't keep their mouths shut. It's unbelievable. It's great.
And Chris,
great
did you
water.
See the video of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, who can also opt out of Golden State? They may be headed to the Knicks as a pair, to pair up with Porzingis.
Oy. Oh, I love that. Keep it in your pantalones, please. Here's
and if
Murray.
They do the math right, they can get Jimmy Butler, too.
Here's Murray's update. We're back to discuss this and anything else you want on an Agenda Free Friday with Gaspa.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Mazz bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We got Gasper in our Town for Tire studios here. Gasper's, I don't know how to put this, a Bradyite. Member of the Boohoo Brady crew. He's a chronicler of Tom Brady and is close to the situation on occasion. So his insights on Tom Brady are always worthwhile. Tommy Curran this week on NBC Sports Boston had some interesting thoughts about Brady's future here and how it's maybe not quite as locked down as some want to believe. I think if I'm summing up his thoughts properly, he said basically Tom Brady could be retiring after 2019. That's it. Two more years and then that's it. If there's more, it won't be here. And that's, if I've misrepresented that, forgive me, but it's something along those lines. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I found that to be really interesting because Tom is definitely plugged in, you know, when it comes to Tom Brady. And just the idea that if Brady keeps going after 2019, it would be with another team. I mean, if you boil it down, based on what he's sort of saying, it feels like the idea is that Brady's had enough here. He's ready to move on. Like, whatever has happened the last, you know, 18 months or whatever the time period was that, you know, the last couple of years where Brady said football wasn't as much fun as it should have been, has had a lasting effect, I think, on his relationship with the team. And it seems like, you know, a lot of us thought, you're sort of looking at it and you're like, okay, you know, these issues aren't really fully resolved, but they've sort of put them behind them to go win. But it's more than that, right? I mean, they've sort of come to this agreement that it's like, well, we agree to disagree, but let's go win another Super Bowl. You know, we have two chances to do this. And it's really sad just to think about the idea that this thing could unravel potentially from the inside. And it could unravel because it gets to a point where Tom Brady decides he doesn't want to play here anymore. That's shocking to me.
I mean, look, Brady's thoughts and, you know, his motivations there, I mean, they are what they are. My belief is Robert Kraft will never let him play in another uniform.
There's no shot of him playing somewhere else.
No, there's just, Robert won't let it. He just, the connection, the ego, the emotional connection, all that stuff, Robert won't let it happen. So if Brady plays out these 2 years, they don't come to a contract extension, and Brady wants to keep playing, they'll franchise him. I mean, they're not. Robert is not going to let him go play in another uniform.
I mean, because every other player in that league, Brady doesn't have any rights. Like, what's he going to do? He can't get to free agency. He can't get there.
Can't get to free agency. Right.
There's just no way he's going to get there. He's not going to have a choice. He's going to have to retire.
What if Bill's okay letting him go?
Well, so what? Bill was okay letting him go before.
Exactly.
How did that work out?
I know, but I'm just saying. I mean, that seems to sort of spark some discord in the organization, and it seems like they're now in a mode of not stepping on Bill's toes, doesn't it? I mean, those contract tweaks reeked of more of Bill than of the Krafts.
Bill's not going to be here. He's not going to be here. He's gone too. I mean, that's going to be the end of that. like, and again, I you know, it's too bad, Chris. See, when you say if it ends that way, I think it is ending that way. I think we're already in the process. So, like, I'm not at all surprised by that aspect of it. If it's after next season, that part to me, that part of it is newsworthy. Like, that soon, he's only going to give Kraft 2 more years. After Kraft ultimately, you know, force Bill's hand on Garoppolo and characterize that or define it however you want. After, he's only going to give Kraft 2 more years and then buy Robert?
Well, what if you're Tom, though, Tony, and you look at it and you say, okay, he did me a solid on the Garoppolo thing. He's out of here. But what I asked you for was no more Garoppolo and a contract that pays me for what I am, the best quarterback in the game and the greatest quarterback of all time. And then you turned around and said to me, well, I got Garoppolo out of here. You're good. I mean, if you're Tom, you might look at that and say, okay, after everything I've done, like, that's, you really think that's enough? Like, that's, we're good. We're good on that. That's what you think of me? Okay. I'm all set here.
Yeah. So my feeling on that, because I said this earlier in the offseason, too bad. You don't run the team, Tom. You don't get everything you want. You don't get to kick out my future and get the contract too. And by the way, we did give you Guerrero back, so quit being a little baby about it.
Yeah, but that one makes no sense to me, though, because it's what the owners do to the players every time in a negotiation for the CBA. They throw out some crazy thing and say, well, we're going to do this. We're going to have a 25-game season. And then, like, when they start negotiating, they say, okay, we'll take the 25-game season off the table. Like, it's some concession. Guerrero was already there, and they were winning Super Bowls, and then Bill decided to pull the plug for whatever reason. So it's like, that's not giving him anything. And everything Guerrero does, whether you believe it or not, Tom does. And whatever Guerrero does to help Tom has helped this organization immensely. So the idea of, like, oh, you know, we gave you Guerrero. It's like, please, give me. Again, if I'm Brady, I'm looking at that. I'm like, okay.
Do you think,
whatever you guys think.
Do you think Bill wants Guerrero there?
No.
Okay. So, and if Brady had to choose getting Guerrero back in the capacity he had him or the contract, which do you think he'd choose?
Both.
Yeah, if see, he had
Chris,
to choose.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Like, don't discount the money.
Both. He's like, I've been here for 18 exactly. years. Everything you've built is because of me. I want both. Is that too much to ask?
Exactly.
I'm telling you, the Garoppolo concession is an enormous concession. Enormous. And if Brady doesn't see that, he's blind. Like, for the Patriots, Jimmy Garoppolo is 10 years. 10. So now you're asking me to give up?
We think. I mean maybe. He didn't look like 10 years. Yeah.
Looks about 10 months.
Week one. That was not a 10-year performance.
10 years.
Uh-huh.
At the time, everyone, we all assumed.
Unless you're talking about one of your assorted McCowns, that type of 10-year career, because that's what last week looked like.
Okay. So again, I'm telling you that Belichick wanted him, and I think deep down, Kraft probably would have kept him under normal circumstances, but the issue became what it became. And you don't think that that's a big sacrifice on the part of the owner?
Here's the thing that I don't get. And people have said this to me, and I'm sure someone will blast me on Twitter or correct me, whatever. If it was that big a deal, then for 1 year, you couldn't have carried Garoppolo on the franchise tag for one season?
No. Okay, so I agree with you on that. He doesn't.
Why not?
Greg. It's $25 million, and then you would have had to pay Brady 15 more to get him up to 25. It would have cost you 40. For a guy to hold a clipboard, no owner's going to do that, and it's unreasonable to expect it.
What happened to the Tom has no leverage thing? So it doesn't matter what Garoppolo makes. He has no leverage. He has to play, right? I thought that was it.
Chris, Brady wouldn't have played if Garoppolo was getting more money than him. He would have held out or something, and rightfully so. He would have been so pissed about that.
And Chris, at the end of the day, that was the point of contention. I think Belichick thought he was going to franchise him. I think Belichick, again, that's what's in the Lombardi book, right? That I think Belichick looked at it and said, worst comes to worst, I'll franchise him and I'll keep him. And Kraft said, uh-uh. No.
And so, I'm sorry, that's a huge miscalculation by Bill. To think that an owner is going to pay a guy $25 million. I'm not talking about the cap, which they can figure out.
That's what I'm saying.
Which is hard enough. Forget the cap. I mean, you can figure out the cap. $25 million real dollars. And then Brady's at 15, so you've got to bump him up so he's not completely loses his mind. So
that's easy. Here's $10 million of incentives you can earn.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying.
That's exactly what they would have done.
So now
instead of five,
now it's not 25 for Garoppolo. It's 35 because you're giving Brady an extra 10. So $35 million out of your pocket just for a guy to hold a clipboard. It's unreasonable to expect any owner to.
Financially, would it have been worth it?
In the long run, yes, but no one's going
to
do it.
Okay, then to me, you do it. If it's worth it, you do it.
But if you're the gold standard organization, if you're the organization that always has the answers and thinks outside of the box, then don't you do that?
Yes, thank you.
I guarantee you, if they had done it, everyone around here would have saying, you know, look at the brilliance of the Patriots. So, like, no matter what they've done the smart thing. I'm just telling you, practically speaking, in real dollars, there's no way that was going to happen.
Trading Garoppolo was a huge sacrifice, Chris. Huge. That's a huge give. I know Murray thinks that Garoppolo is the Italian Osweiler, as he likes to call him, for crying out loud. But they regarded, Belichick regarded Garoppolo as the next quarterback, which means 10 years. 10. They give up 10 years of quarterbacking. That's a big give.
Okay, we can add that to the list of items. Long commercial-free segment is next. We'll join you right after this.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matt Barnes. Heath Henry. Doc Joe Kelly. And those other guys.
It's time to spin the wheel of gutless bums. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
Kimbrough, right, Thornburg, Brazzers.
And today's gutless bum is the jackpot of some.
We are on to the eighth inning. Sox hit 3-1. And Pointer into the ball game. High fly ball deep left field by Gurriel. He jumps on this one into the light standard and out of here.
Kind of cheated on. He looking fastball, got it, and left.
As Pointer comes out, and Kelly coming in. And that's going to be ball four.
Wow.
And a slider. Line drive, and that's going to fall in right field. Davis to second, stopping there. The eighth inning. Two out, two on. Here's the 2-1 to Grichik. And it hits him. It did indeed on a change, and that's going to load up the bases.
Not a very pretty outing here for Joe Kelly. Kind of did it all. A walk, a base hit, and a hit batter with a changeup. His control has been very iffy, to say the least.
That hit him, and that's going to force in a run. And here comes the manager, Alex Cora. He's got Workman all loosened up. He's going to go to him.
What a debacle. Another debacle. So Maz had a good stat earlier. Why don't you read all those bullpen stats? Do you mind, Maz?
Sure, give me 1 second.
To open up the show, you had some good bullpen stats. And then what I consider like the whopper of all stats, which is, well, go ahead.
Okay, so here you go. This is according to Alex Speer, Chris, in the Boston Globe, owned by John Henry, just as a disclaimer. The Red Sox have 10 blown saves since the All-Star break, most in the American League. Most. Got that? Most in the American League. The team has converted just 50% of save opportunities in that time. Also, worst in the AL. Worst. Worse than Baltimore. Of the five AL teams that are likely going to be playing in October, the Red Sox are getting the fewest strikeouts, giving up the most walks, and giving up both hits and home runs. Hits and home runs. And Alex Speer says, the Red Sox have still managed to win remarkably. They are 11-6 when they have blown a save.
That last one blows me away. Coin a phrase.
I mean, that is a .650 winning percent. That's ridiculous.
So that explains the 99-46-2 record, which is they win in spite of their bullpen. And then last night again was a fake win, so they have two fake wins. The other one being the Marlins game a couple weeks ago. So first to 99.
Yep. And the 99-46-2 is actually pending a petition to make it 98-46-3.
I'm actually against the one that you want to have as the third fake win, because Aroldis Chapman truly did blow that game, that last Sunday game against, you know, when they played the Yankees.
Yeah, it was a ground out to third. And the guy short hopped it, and then was it Bird at first? Whoever was at first did a horrible job.
Yeah, he could have picked that. Yeah, he definitely could have picked that. I mean,
you know what? Fake win.
No, there's inherent foolishness with that Yankees team because of Aaron Boone.
No.
this is why it's
exactly
hard.
Fake win.
No.
It's hard to go back and put the genie in the bottle. Either way, that's pending. That's pending review by the committee. But right now it's 99-46-2. Anyway, 11-6 in blown saves, Chris. Can that hold through the playoffs?
Not against the caliber of competition. I just want to go back to this. Does it move you at all, Murray, if I tell you that the game that Maz is petitioning was a game that was started by David Price? Does that move the needle at all for you?
No, because he's been their best pitcher since the All-Star game.
I thought maybe that would move that you'd say, I'm going to take that one.
No, there's two true fake wins here for this team. So they have yet to get to 100, so, you know, go there this weekend. You could celebrate when they finally get to 100 wins. It'd be very exciting.
If you give me a little time, Murray, I bet you I could find 10.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Like, I believe in their qualities, you know, to... to win 11 of 17 games in which you've blown a save tells you you're resilient.
Yes.
And you fight to the end.
Yeah.
And you're clutch.
And the competition blows.
You can hit. Okay. The competition, granted, does blow. But those other things are true, too. So I think the playoffs are going to be, you know, either, depending on how you look at this, just excruciating. Because they're going to blow games and they're going to be late and they're going to be like in all these games or wildly entertaining, right? They're going to be. Yeah. I mean, I do not see the Red Sox bowing out meekly in three or four games like they have in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully not. But when I look at it with these other teams, they're going to go up against. If you're any of those other teams now, Oakland's starting to get into a situation now where are they going to have enough arms here? Are they going to be throwing an opener every game of the playoffs? You know, Sean Manaea is done for the year. I think Trevor Cahill
just went on the DL.
And they already had four guys who had to have Tommy John. So they're in a tough spot. That's a really good bullpen that they have. But these other teams, you look at, if you're the Yankees or Cleveland or Houston, do you look at the Red Sox and say, that's a team we can't beat? That team's definitely better than us. If we beat them, it's an upset.
No.
Do you even think that any of these teams, you know, outside of Oakland, would look at it and say, if we beat the Red Sox in a 5 or 7 game series, that's an upset?
No.
I think it's a lot more even, and that's where this bullpen comes into play. And to go back to last night, I thought Bobby Pointer was auditioning potentially for a postseason role.
He definitely was.
It reminded me, remember last year when they put Austin Maddox on the postseason roster? Because he was, what do you have, like 6 outings? But he was really good, and so they made the decision to put him on. I thought it was like a similar type of thing, and you know, he didn't pass that test. I still feel good about Brazier, or Brazier's as you guys call him. I think he's solid.
Free trial has run out.
We'll see what's up with Barnes when he comes back. My concern with Barnes, the numbers are good, but a lot of those 8th innings that he's gotten out of, you look at it and it's like he's putting guys on base. You know, the bases are, he struck out, to me, the Matt Barnes 8th inning is to strike out the side but load the bases. And I just feel like you can't keep getting away with that against better competition. The bullpen definitely concerns me when you look at it. But this is what they have to go with. Like, you know, no one's going to really ride to the rescue here unless one of the starters, you know, unless Evaldi or somebody, you know, gets it together.
I'm telling you, to me, it is alarmingly similar to the 0-3 team. When you talk about the 11-6 stat, you know, being able to win games where you're blowing saves, the 0-3 team was like that. And you know what happened at the end? It bit him in the ass because the manager was so traumatized by his bullpen, he couldn't make the simple move and pull his starter in the 7th inning, even when his bullpen started to pitch well. So watch Cora, too, because the trauma that has been inflicted on that manager, he's going to have, like, the baseball version of PTSD by the time he gets into the postseason.
All right, Gasper, give me a final thought on Patriots Jaguars this Sunday.
Yeah, I like the Patriots in this game. I do. Like I said, I just think offensively the Jaguars won't have enough to be able to score enough points. And I think the Patriots defense is a little bit better. And I think it'll be interesting. You know, let's see what it is. One thing I'll be interested too is when I think about that Houston game, I was a little surprised that Houston didn't play more man coverage. Now, it's tough. You play man. You're obviously declaring what's going on. You know, the Patriots send a guy in motion. Brady knows what's up. He finds the matchup. But when you have receivers that there are question marks about, do you want to play zone and off man and give them free releases into their routes? Because that's basically what Houston did. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if Jacksonville will try and play a little more man and make a Philip Dorsett or a Chris Hogan, you know, get off a jam at the line and get into his route and have that timing with Brady, which, at least for Dorsett, is still, as good as he was in week one, a work in progress.
Do we have a Gasper and Murray extravaganza tomorrow?
We do, 11-2. At 1 o'clock, we'll have Jeff Perlman, who wrote the new book, Football for a Buck. It's a story of the USFL.
Oh, love it, love it.
So we'll have him on, more on this Pats game against the Jaguars that Chris is poo-pooing. And
I'm not poo-pooing the game.
Fake hype.
Like, I mean, we didn't even get a Doug Marrone. Like, who, that was like the worst conference call ever.
And Chris,
so fake.
Chris had a good column on Des Bryant.
There you go, Doug.
Chris had a good column on Des Bryant, too, this week, that the Patriots should still be in on him, and I agree, so we'll talk about that, too.
Very good.
All right, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
We'll hold your finger.
We'll give you a listen tomorrow morning. Thanks, Chris, for coming in. We'll see you next week. Hour to go, Agenda Free Friday, everything on the board. One open line if you want to grab it at 617-779-0985. Right to you after Murray's update, no commercials.
Michael Felger, Tony Mazzara.